You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting marketing or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, certified financial planner, and an accredited estate planner on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org, and that is especially helpful for people who are outside of our listening area. You can go online, wdiy.org, and click listen online. You can also find old shows on the website. You can look for old podcasts. They're under the Your Financial Choices program section. So you got to look for that. It's a beautiful evening. So I thank everyone who are staying tuned. If you're in your car, I hope you have a pleasant ride home. Hopefully you'll learn a thing or two. Today is September 4th, if you didn't know that. It's September 4th. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 14,930, the NASDAQ at 3649, and the S&P closed at 1653. Last week, we discussed general healthcare concepts to consider in your financial decisions, as well as the beginning of the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. We were joined by Mike Apolity, certified financial planner and financial advisor at Valley National Financial Advisors. I thank him for being here. Tonight, we're discussing year-end tax planning. And you say, Lori, it's not year-end yet. Well, that is true. But we need enough time to plan so that we get all of our planning done by year-end. So we need to start looking, gathering documents, looking at your numbers so that we can start implementing. Hopefully, we'll have a few ideas to help you tonight. We are live, and we are here to take your questions. Judy Ann is in the studio, and she will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we can talk without confusion. If you are not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann, and she will bring it into the studio. I love questions and welcome them. It's the most favorite part of the show for me. So you are welcome to call in. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can do that anytime. So again, tonight, year-end income tax planning. And I'm going to break up the show a little bit because there's a few things I want to talk about at the beginning, and then I'll move more into the year-end planning after probably the first break or so. So part of what I want to talk about is the timing of recognizing income, paying expenses so that you can get deductions or tax credits, making income tax payments. How do we do that? When do you sell investments for income tax planning, and making retirement plan contributions or distributions or even conversions as part of your income tax planning? So one of the things I typically do is I'll go on the IRS's website to see if they have any new information there. And there were a couple things that I thought were worthwhile sharing. So that's what I want to do first before I get into the nuts and bolts of income tax planning. And one section they had was called Give Your Tax Records a Mid-Year Tune-Up This Summer. And I thought that fit right in with what we were talking about tonight. And they also gave some tax tips for 2013. And I want to just give you what those topics were and direct you to go check those out in further detail if you're interested on the IRS's website. And then I do want to touch on some new legislation that came out. New law, Treasury and IRS announced that all legal same-sex marriages will be recognized for federal tax purposes. So I want to give a little bit of attention to that as well. So first, let me tell you these current 2013 tax tips. One was three tax scams to beware of this summer. I know it's the end of summer, but it's always important to be careful of tax scams. The IRS is never going to email you. You have to be careful of phishing. Be careful what you're sending across your email. So there's some information there. If you go to the IRS's website and you look for 2013 tax tips, you get a whole page of these ideas, and then they have links to each of them. You can click a link and it'll give you more information. They have, one of the tax tips was give withholding and payments a checkup to avoid a tax surprise. Hence why we're going to have this show today. We're going to talk about, you know, how to plan, do tax planning, and what are you doing for your tax payments. There is a link for 10 tax tips for individuals selling their home. If you receive an IRS notice, here's what to do. Explore a quick and simple way of understanding taxes. That was really an interesting link. It was developed for teachers, I believe, to use in school settings, and it kind of evolved into also helping young people, teenagers, college kids, learn about income taxes and understanding them. And when I clicked through that, that was very interesting. I think that would be helpful to a lot of people, especially, you know, young adults who haven't really had to pay too much attention to their income tax. Or for those of you who don't know what FICA is, or Social Security tax, or the Medicare tax, or the OASDI that you might see on your pay stub, this is a nice little overview. And when you go to this link, again, explore a quick and simple way of understanding taxes, there's different topics that you can also drill down and get more information on. And then you actually can take like a little check for understanding quiz, which I thought was really nice. But of course, I like taking quizzes. What else do we have? IRS offers tips on how to amend your tax return. IRS website explains tax provisions of the health care law, provides guide to online resources. I click that and you know, it kind of clicked us to the healthcare.gov website, which I talked about probably 2 weeks ago, last week, healthcare.gov to explain the Affordable Care Act. So I didn't get as much on that link. There is a link for back to school tax tips for students and parents, and I have some information on that tonight. That talks about some of the education credits that are available, so I'll touch on that. 6 good reasons why you should become a tax volunteer, 10 cool reasons to visit irs.gov in Spanish, helpful tax tips if you're moving, reduce your taxes with miscellaneous deductions. There wasn't a lot of information there either. So while I give you these resources, you know, I say, oh, go to irs.gov, you know, you're not going to get everything. And in fact, you're not going to get everything even by listening to the show. It's about awareness, education. Being aware, I think, prompts you to go, you know, get more information or talk to advisors or engage advisors who can help you make better decisions. So even though I like to empower you with all this educational material, it doesn't mean you always know exactly how to apply it or what else is out there. I'm going to give you an example. And this is why, you know, you just kind of have to have an awareness. When we talked about the link here that says reduce your taxes with miscellaneous deductions, when I clicked on that, it made no mention of taking a deduction for management fees that you might be paying on your brokerage accounts, on your investment accounts, on your accounts that are managed that aren't your retirement accounts. So an investment management fee is a deduction that I did not see listed on this link. Now, they did refer you to some other publications. So if you are just taking a cursory look at some of this, you may not be aware of all the other things that you might be entitled to. So it's like drill down, drill down, drill down. So not everybody has the time to drill down. We just want you to be aware, have your antenna up, start watching for things that are available to you. But in the end, sometimes it does help to have a professional guide you and help you with things. And then the last link I had seen was 8 tips for taxpayers who owe taxes. So all of those links are available on the irs.gov website. I do like referring people to some of these government websites that have lots of information. Someone's taking the time to put it there for you, so let's take advantage of it. The other items they mention in giving your tax records amid your tune-up, they really talk about keeping copies of your filed tax returns. Make sure that you have a copy of it. A lot of people go online, do their tax return free, and then they realize they didn't print it off or keep a copy anywhere. Always keep a copy of the tax return that you filed, and you want to keep it for at least 3 years. I keep it longer. You have to keep it for at least 3 years. There are some other guidelines on records that you need to keep and for personal and for business, and I'll review that a little bit when I come back, and then I'll touch on the same-sex marriage tax ramifications, and then we will get into the tax planning for the rest of the year. If you have questions, I think it's going to be a fast show, folks, so if you have questions, you better call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to WDIY, Community Public Radio for the Lehigh Valley. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
And we are back. Thanks for staying tuned. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We're talking about year-end income tax planning, but I'm giving some heads up on some other information that I wanted to open up the show with. And that was some tax tips for individuals on the website, irs.gov. So lots of information there. Just search for 2013 tax tips. You will see all the links that I just reviewed. You can click on them and get more information. The other thing I wanted to add was keeping copies of your filed tax returns in your records for at least 3 years. I recommend longer. I recommend, you know, forever. But sometimes you can get rid of the backup junk. They also suggest that you keep the records to support those items. Make sure that you have those documentations for expenses, your income, your W-2s, your 1099s, deductions that you've claimed. It might include sales slips, credit card receipts, other proofs of payment, invoices, canceled checks, bank statements, mileage logs. You also want to keep records on any home that you might own or investment property. So many people think that there is a principal residence exclusion and you don't need to keep any of your records. Well, because, you know, if you have a gain on it, maybe it's going to be all excluded and you'll think, I'll never have that much gain. I'm not going to keep my records. But what you don't know today might be that eventually you might turn that property into a rental property. So you want to keep your records just in case you change the use of the property. Or if you gift property to your children, which I don't recommend necessarily, but if you were to gift it, your children take your basis in the property, meaning your cost or your investment in the property. So you still want to keep records on your home, even if you think you, if you ever sell it, you're not going to have a gain on it or not have to pay tax on the gain. If you change the use of it, you want to make sure that you have those records so that you can document cost basis, you know, either for renting it out in the future or if you're gifting it. And then if you gift it to someone who doesn't live there, then it's not their principal residence and they don't get to exclude any gain. For businesses, the same thing applies. Keep track of all your records and especially employment-related tax records. Those they recommend even longer, keep for at least 4 years after the tax is due. So you want to keep records longer than, you know, the filing date. Folks, if you have questions this evening, we welcome calls. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're taking calls live on air or off air if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Judy Ann and she will bring it in. Now, this new law, the Treasury and IRS announced this August 29th, so just very, very recently, that the U.S. Department of Treasury and the Internal Revenue Service ruled that same-sex couples legally married in jurisdictions that recognize their marriage will be treated as married for federal tax purposes. The ruling applies regardless of whether the couple lives in a jurisdiction that recognizes same-sex marriage or a jurisdiction that does not recognize same-sex marriage. So the federal government is going to recognize same-sex marriage couples, no matter if they were married in a state that it is legal, but they live in a state that's not legal. It's going to be recognized. Under the ruling, they will be treated as married for all federal tax purposes, including income and gift and estate taxes. It applies to all federal tax provisions where marriage is a factor, including filing status, claiming personal and dependency exemptions, taking the standard deduction, employee benefits, contributing to an IRA, and claiming the earned income tax credit or child tax credit. Any same-sex marriage legally entered into in one of the 50 states, D.C., or a U.S. territory will be covered by the ruling. However, it does not apply to registered domestic partnerships, civil unions, or similar formal relationships recognized. You must file your 2013 federal income tax return using either the married filing joint or married filing separate filing status, and you may, but are not required to, file original or amended returns choosing to be treated as married for federal tax purposes for one or more prior tax years still open under the statute of limitations. So generally that's going back like 3 years from the due date. So 2010, 2011, and 2012, if those returns were already filed, you could go back and amend under the married filing joint status if you indeed were married in a jurisdiction that recognizes same-sex marriages. Okay, there's lots of other guidance and information on the IRS website regarding that. So if that applies, I would suggest going on irs.gov and searching for same-sex marriage, and you'll get this Treasury, you know, bulletin or communication where they talk about, you know, how it will affect you. So, and I heard some blurbs on WDIY as I was coming in on veterans benefits, I think on a program that Jeff had on before, how, you know, a lot of new changes and a lot of different things going on. So it's all about awareness. So if you know someone who that might apply to, you can share that information with them. Okay, we're going to talk about year-end tax planning now. If you do have questions, and it doesn't have to be about year-end income tax planning, but if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Let me set the groundwork here. Year-end tax planning, I would say people usually think it means lowering your income tax. You know, that's why we're trying to do tax planning, right? That's what a lot of times people think, oh, I need to lower my income tax. Some people who don't have income tax might not be thinking about that. They might say, well, you know, I don't pay any income tax, so I don't need to worry about lowering my income tax. Well, you might be someone who we might want to increase your income then. Maybe you have things that you have not taxed yet, but could eventually be taxed at some point in the future that you might want to accelerate income into a current year to play tax brackets so that if you weren't going to pay any income tax, maybe even if you accelerate income, you still won't pay income tax. What I mean by that is quite often we have people who might retire and maybe they haven't even started collecting Social Security yet, or maybe they only have Social Security and you're not having to take money out of your IRA yet. you know, you have some other money, you don't have a pension, you have IRA money, you have your Social Security, but you don't need your IRA money. So you figure, oh, I'm not going to pay any income tax. I just have my Social Security. I'm going to let my IRA sit for a while. And you could do that. But if you don't have any income that you're having to pay tax on, if we throw a little bit of income on your return, maybe you would still be in a zero tax bracket. Maybe you have itemized deductions, or maybe your standard deduction and your exemption still will cover whatever income we've put on your tax return. So year-end tax planning isn't just about lowering your income tax. It's about doing some smart planning today while you have the opportunity to do so, that you're either going to lower taxes today or you might lower taxes in the future, might be years from now. You know, a big item that people tend to forget about when they're planning is, if you're a married couple, you might be in a reasonable tax bracket, but then when you one of you dies and there's a spouse who predeceases, sometimes what happens is all of a sudden you have the surviving spouse who's now filing single and their tax bracket goes way up, and that wasn't planned for. So, Jeff, we have a call. Can we take that call quick before we go to break? Okay. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Lori. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. And thank you so much for returning my email.
Oh, you're welcome.
That spreadsheet, and yep, it looks like a wonderful tool to do some financial planning for me. Thank you.
Great, great. You're welcome. How can I help you?
I am interested in something you mentioned a couple weeks ago, and it was about changing money market accounts over to Roth IRAs. I have a money market account that's not, it's not in my 401k or any tax sheltered.
Okay. We did talk about Roth accounts probably a couple weeks ago relating to some education program using like a Roth for education. So I'm not exactly sure how this relates, but I'll tell you quick how we can get some money into Roth. You can't just take money market money and put it into a Roth unless you have earned income and then are allowed to put money into a Roth. So if you have earned income, you can put, I think it's like $5,000 if you're under 50, plus an extra $1,000 if you're over 50. So let's say you have earned income of $6,000. Then yes, you can put money market, you can take your money market money and put it into a Roth, as long as together, if you're married, you and your spouse aren't making more than $173,000. Okay, so there's income limits as to who can contribute to a Roth.
Okay.
So you have to make sure you're under the contribution limit, and you have to make sure you have earned income. So that's one way to get money into a Roth. The beautiful thing about that is, if you just have money sitting in cash in a money market, you can move that to the Roth, and then if eventually that starts making money or you decide to invest it, those future earnings or growth on that account would not be income taxable to you. But at the same time, you could always pull out the original contribution. So that's one piece of that. That's one way to get money into a Roth. Another way to get money into a Roth is if you have an IRA and you convert some of it to a Roth. And that is one thing I like people to regularly look at if their income's low enough or they think they're going to be in a lower tax bracket when they convert, than later if they were to take money out of an IRA. So you can convert some, and you can convert as little or as much as you want. For years, the IRS limited us on who could convert and how much we could convert. And now that limitation doesn't exist. So we can convert IRA money to Roth IRA money, you know, without limitations. It's just how much income do you want to put on your tax return? You know, you got to be careful of that, because there's going to be all kinds of other taxes I'm going to talk about later in the show. The other reason it came up, we were talking about people using Roth for education, because we were saying if someone had money in a money market, let's say to pay for education, we talked about maybe contributing money to a 529 to get a deduction on a PA return if someone had eventual education costs for, you know, any family member.
Okay.
So that's how we get money into Roth, though, either conversion or actual contribution. And also, Carolyn, some people have a Roth 401k feature in their retirement plans at work through their employer.
I have, yes.
So you could put earmark money that you're contributing, the employee, not the employer's share, but the employee can say to the employer, you know what, I want 3% into my Roth 401k, and I want, you know, 2% into my regular 401k, or I want it all into my Roth or all into my 401k. Usually they give you the option to kind of mix it up a little bit. So you can get money into a Roth 401k through work, but you can't get that money out until you, you know, retire and roll it over, and then you could roll it over to a Roth. Or if you do an in-service distribution, usually at age 59 and a half, some plans allow you to do that.
What is an in-service distribution?
In-service distribution is when you're still working, but the plan might allow you to take money out of your 401k, and you can either take it out and use it or roll it over into a rollover IRA. So you sometimes can take an in-service distribution if the plan allows it, usually after age 59 and a half.
Okay.
And that's a way to get control of investing the money in your 401k, you know, if you don't like what your employer has to provide. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. It's a lot of information. I was just kind of absorbing it.
Yes. Sorry. And when I talk fast, it just starts flying out. So.
No, that's great. That's fine. You are a wealth of information. I have one last quick question. One of
okay.
the things that we need to do every 15 to 20 years or so, we need to buy a new vehicle.
Okay.
And we're looking at that now. So I'm thinking of taking a good chunk of this money market and using it as a down payment.
Okay.
But I'll still have some left over. Is it best to put as much down on a vehicle right away as possible?
Well, I would...
Does it just depend on how it's invested versus if you borrow money, the percent interest that you're paying there?
Right. I mean, you're definitely going the right direction as to what you need to consider, Carolyn. And I think what you need to look at is if someone told me they had $100,000 cash sitting in the bank and, you know, their emergency reserve that they really needed was 20, then I would say, well, you got an extra $80,000 of cash. And then if you told me you wanted to buy a car, and I would say, well, you know, if you're not going to do anything else with that money, you might as well just buy the car,
mm-hmm.
not take a loan. Because the interest on cars is not deductible for us, you know, which
right.
is different than our homeowners, you know, our mortgages, which are deductible. So sometimes what we look at is the after-tax cost of money and the after-tax earnings on money. So, you know, if we have $100,000 invested and we earn $10,000, well, we have to pay tax on that. And at the end of the day, it might be really $8,000 cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we have $100,000 expense and we're paying 6% on it, you know, we're paying $6,000 of mortgage interest, but I get a deduction for that, and it's only costing me $4,000. You know, you start to look at what is money costing me after tax, and what am I earning after tax. But if you have lots of extra cash, and you know you don't need the car payment, I would say, you know, if you could pay for the car, pay for the car, because the rates you can get on car loans isn't always that great. If you have to go to, like, you know, a local bank, or you'd want to explore what the best rate could be that you could get.
Okay, that's one of the things we're researching right now, is what's the best loan we can get, and comparing
mm-hmm.
that.
Right.
Okay.
So you just look at the cost of money and what you'd be losing if you, you know, didn't invest it. But if you just have it in cash anyway, you know,
okay.
why pay the interest rate?
Right. One last quick question.
Okay.
I have a target retirement fund.
Okay.
With an expense ratio of 0.17%.
Mm-hmm.
That is a low. Is that low? Is that 0.17?
That's not a lot. And usually in any kind of fund that you're going to see, you know, even in your employer provided funds, there's a cost to run any of these funds, right? I mean, because when you're in a target retirement fund, someone's making investment choices for you based on your time horizon.
Right.
But there's a money manager who's doing that. So people have to recognize that these expenses that we see in these funds are covering a number of different things. It could be covering the research, covering the managers, you know, covering literature that they have to put out, prospectuses, things like that. So, yeah, that's not a very high expense ratio, it doesn't sound like.
Right.
Sounds very reasonable. Okay.
My husband just wrote me a note. Can I ask you one last question?
Okay. I'm so okay.
Sorry. He is 59 and a half, and he's wondering if he should use part of his IRA distribution to put down on the vehicle.
I would be cautious of that, because then you're having to take money out and pay an income tax on it. So,
okay. Even though he's 59 and a half.
Right. He can avoid a 10% penalty, but you're still paying income tax. And when you put that extra income on your tax return with whatever other income you have, you could be throwing yourself up into a higher bracket or putting other limits on your itemized deductions. A number of different things could happen. You'd want to look at the tax implications of that. If you told me you didn't have any income tax, I might say, well, then back to what I said at the beginning of the show, maybe you want to throw extra income on your return, you know, but not if you already have a lot of income. You'd want to run those numbers.
Okay.
All right, Carolyn, I got to go to break.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Have a good night. Bye-bye. Folks, we'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. Folks, the time is 6:31. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Folks, the phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. You can call in with questions. We can talk live, my favorite thing to do. If you're not comfortable talking live, Judy Ann will take your question and bring it into the studio and give it to me, and I'll do my best to answer it. You can also send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. And if they're more lengthy questions, you can do that as well. So about year-end tax planning, the first thing you need to do, folks, is pull out your 2012 tax return. You got to start with last year's tax return. We have to kind of know what the basis is. But not only that, you also want to make sure you account for everything when you're looking at 2013. So you're thinking about, oh, what do I have to worry about for taxes? And you think wages. And then you look at your 2012 tax return, you remember, oh, shoot, that's right. We had interest. We had dividends. I got to factor that in. Oh, whoops, I sold something. Got to factor that in. So you want to pull up last year's tax return. The other thing you're going to look for on there, you want to see what your last year's tax liability was. Because when we talk about tax planning and making sure we understand what you owe, whether or not you have to make estimated tax payments will depend on your last year's tax due. So we have to look at that. We also want to look to see if you have any capital loss carryforwards, any passive loss carryforwards. So when we're looking at planning, we're looking at opportunities. What can we find and get out of that tax return to make some good decisions? We had a call come in from off air, Albert from Brinigsville. He said he works for the U.S. Postal Service. Flexible spending account offered. How would that affect taxes? Albert, great call, great tax planning topic. And that is flexible spending is the ability for you to take money out of your paycheck pre-tax that you are not going to be income taxed on, and you can set it aside for two different things for flexible spending. One is for medical expenses, and the other is for child care. So if you have child care, which they have limited to $2,500 per person now, so husband and wife, if you both work and your employers both offer flexible spending, you could each do $2,500 for child care and actually cover $5,000 of child care expense for your child. If it used to be $5,000, by the way, for the family. Now it's $2,500 per person. But there's also medical flexible spending. So the medical, I don't recall if they limited the medical off the top of my head now, but I think that used to be, let's pretend that's, you know, $2,500 as well. It might have gone up to $5,000. I don't recall. So the reason I don't know that number off the top of my head is so many people are afraid of putting too much money into the medical flexible spending account because both of these are use it or lose it. So if you don't use it for the valid expenses, you could lose them. But Albert, I don't want people to be afraid of it because of that. What I try to counsel people to do is to plan your expenses. So one year, my husband and I might do the flexible spending for our medical expenses at $1,000, and another year we might do $2,000. So in the one year, nobody's getting glasses. Maybe it's just our basic, you know, out-of-pocket medical expenses, prescriptions, chiropractor, things like that. The next year, we might have the higher amount to do things like the crowns on my teeth or glasses. So what will happen inevitably is my son, my husband, and myself, we all go in and get the glasses at the same time. And that can run, you know, quite a large bill because I get the really thin lenses because otherwise I'd have really thick lenses. So Albert, if you have the opportunity to flexible spending, usually there's an open enrollment period, usually around October, most employers do in the fall, that you can sign up. What you have to think about, Albert, is what are your typical medical expenses or childcare expenses? What do you expect in 2014? And then they take it out of your paycheck each pay period, but you might not have it all saved. You know, let's say you only put it away for 1 month and all of a sudden you had to pay for the eyeglasses and they're $500. Well, with the medical spending account, you can still use that money even if you haven't put it all away. So that's one of the dangers for employers, why some employers don't want to do it, is sometimes employees can take out the money before they've actually contributed it and then maybe leave. But the flexible spending account, just plan out what the money is for 2014, do it pre-tax, it's not taxed for federal and or state either. So it's a great, great tax-saving option. Okay, thanks, Albert, for your call. I have John on line one. John from Bethlehem. John, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good.
A question. You mentioned earlier on, you know, earned income limits on Roth contributions.
Yep.
I'm contemplating retirement fairly soon. I'm 59 and a half. I'll be getting a pension. My wife will continue to work. So it sounds like the federally, a pension is considered two different ways. It's taxable as income,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't qualify, doesn't count toward, if we file jointly, earned income for a limit on 401, like on a Roth contribution. Is that correct?
Well, it doesn't count as earned income for you to make a contribution to a Roth. It does
right,
count
but if my wife
as
continues
the limits.
To work, right, but if my wife continues to work and has earned income and we still file jointly, then she can make contribution up to her salary?
No, she can make a contribution, but you might be able to, too. And here's the story on that, John. So let's say you retire. You've got a pension. The pension's income taxable, but it's not considered earned income. Your wife
right.
has earned income. She could do a Roth as long as she's under the adjusted gross income limitation, which is page one. If it's under $173,000 total, your total income, not just your
right.
wages, it's your interest, your dividends, it's your pension, it's everything. Page one. Mm-hmm. If page one's under $173,000, and let's pretend your wife makes $70,000. Don't tell me how much she makes. Let's pretend she makes $70,000. She could put money in a Roth, and you could put money in a Roth based on her income.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep, it's a spousal IRA. So we could do a spousal IRA, we could do a traditional deductible IRA, or a Roth IRA based on our spouse's earned income. But it's, I think the number's $5,000 if you're under 50, and in your case, it might be $6,000 because it's an extra $1,000 if you're over 50.
Right.
Okay, so go ahead.
There's no advantage for me to withdraw money from my traditional 401 and then put it into a Roth. It would be the same as a transfer, right?
If you were to take money out, it would be a conversion. And the difference between the conversion and the Roth contribution, like we just described, the spousal Roth or based on earned income, there's a couple different little rules. And I'm going to call this a traditional Roth for explanation purposes. We don't get a deduction for it. But the traditional Roth based on earned income, we're limited to how much we can do. We can only do that $5,000 or $6,000, okay?
Right.
But converting, we can convert any amount. So when we talk about the advantages of taking it out of your 401k, the only reason I would say we would want to take money out of a 401k is you can roll over 401k money to an IRA or roll over 401k money to a Roth IRA, but it's a conversion and you're going to pay income tax on all whatever you convert, but you could convert more than those amounts I just talked about. But
right,
you will
right,
pay
right.
income tax on it. And as long as you're age 59 and a half or older, there won't be any, you know, there's no penalties on converting. But the traditional Roth, you could always tap your original contribution at any time, your original contribution. So if I put in $5,000 and it grows to $5,200 in a year, I could take the $5,000 back out without any penalty. I have to keep the earnings there for 5 years. The conversion is a little trickier. You have to wait 5 years. You're after age 59 and a half. You could probably actually take out the original contribution as well. But it gets a little bit trickier if you're under age 59 and a half, because then you could subject yourself to the 10% penalty.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks very much, Lori.
All right, John. Thank you for calling. Have a good night.
Okay.
Great calls, everyone. I love it. And I love that it fits right in with all the income tax planning that we're talking about. These are the kinds of powerful decisions that you can make that can help you going forward. And in John's example, with the Roth, if they have extra money, if he doesn't need the money from his pension, he's collecting it, and maybe they don't find that they need all that money and they have it sitting in the bank, he could actually make those Roth IRA contributions and, you know, kind of protect future appreciation or growth, you know, or income from further taxation as they get older. Because at some point, he mentioned he has a 401k. At some point, at age 70 and a half, he's going to have required minimum distributions. So what happens is sometimes folks end up in a higher tax bracket, sometimes when they have a pension and required minimum distributions out of their IRAs. So to the extent we can start shifting taxable income into non-taxable income by using a Roth, then we can protect some of that future growth or earnings in, from income taxation. And at such a time when maybe it's not going to cost us that much. It's not going to cost him anything if he makes a traditional Roth, as I've described it. Converting might cost something, but doing just a regular Roth doesn't cost anything. So keep that all in mind for your future tax planning. It also might help protect, you know, a second spouse later on if we have, as I mentioned earlier, if a, you know, a spouse predeceases and then you have the survivor and now they're filing single and all of a sudden they're getting your pension, they're getting your IRA distribution or your 401k distribution. To the extent that we've protected some of that money in a Roth, it might help their tax situation. All right. So when we look at year-end tax plan, let me give you the phone number once more because I've loved the phone calls tonight. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We pull out last year's tax return. We kind of look at all the items on that tax return, make notes of them. Then we also want to pull out our most recent investment statements, our most recent pay stubs, our checkbooks, our credit card statements. You want to gather all of your kind of deductions and what do you have so far. And then you can forecast that out for the rest of the year. Just before I came here, I was looking at a client who got a gas lease payment they weren't expecting. And there were some job changes. So we kind of had to project out what the income was with the new job and the old job and some disability income. And then this gas lease, and then we also threw in some education costs that they had, and what it looked like when I'm looking at the tax planning, is in 2013, there's going to be no benefit for education credits because the income's too high. The income's too high because we had a job change, there was severance pay, the gas lease, all kinds of, you know, events, you know, that collided that caused this poor person to now have too much income to qualify for education credits. It's a bummer. You can't wait to pay the, you know, the tuition in the fall when it's time to be paid. But what I did see for 2014 was that they are not going to have the gas lease payment in 2014. And what I saw is their income drop back down. That then if there's an education expense in 2014, they will qualify for education credits. So the lesson in that tax planning is that I need to tell that client, do not pay the spring tuition for 2014 in December, where some schools will pay out, send out the bill in December, and a lot of folks pay it in December. I'm going to say, you got to wait. Pay that tuition bill in January of 2014, because I want you to get the tuition credit in 2014. Okay? We're going to take another quick break. If you have questions, plenty of time, 610-758-8810. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, where definitely it's you. We are your source for local news and public affairs, NPR, and music diversity. The time now is 6:46. Now back to our program.
Okay. We've got another 14 minutes or so. If you have questions, phone number 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. I'm going to condense some of the tax planning that I want to talk about to get through, hopefully, some important points before the end of the show. And most importantly, for folks, I guess briefly, for folks who are making over $250,000, if your page one is going to be over $250,000, you got to do some planning. You've got to see if you can bring that down at all. Maybe you're on the cusp, maybe you're just over. There is something called the Medicare surtax in 2013. The Medicare surtax has two elements to it. One is based on wages and one is based on net investment income. The one based on wages is if the wages are over $250,000, there's a Medicare surtax of 0.9%. Not huge, but 0.9%. The bigger one is on net investment income, and that is 3.8%. If you are... The $250,000 threshold, by the way, is married, filing, joint. It's $200,000 for single people. So that net investment income, anything, it's the smaller of the net investment income or the amount that exceeds $250,000 if you're married, filing, joint, or $200,000 if you're single. So it's 3.8%. So if you have net investment income of $10,000, and your income, married, filing, joint, is less than $250,000, it's not going to apply to you. If you made $260,000, it's the lesser of the amount over $250,000 or the amount of net investment income. In my example, my net investment income was $10,000. My amount over $250,000 is $10,000. We're going to have a Medicare surtax of 3.8% on $10,000. If my net investment income was $40,000, and my page one income is $260,000, I'm only over by 10, then it's the lower of, and I will only pay the 3.8% on that lower amount. So to the extent someone can do some planning, maybe you just have an odd year, maybe you can control bonuses or commissions or, you know, contributions to 401ks. Maybe you haven't put any money in a 401k yet this year and you're a really high earner. Maybe you could still get enough in, you know, by the end of the year to bring that income down a little bit, save a little bit of that extra Medicare surtax or the net investment income. You want to look at your investments, see what kind of, do you need that kind of income? Do you need to restructure your investments to maybe not be income oriented, but to be more growth oriented? you want to look at how you can affect the income on page one of your return to avoid Medicare surtax. So that's just a brief overview of that because it doesn't affect a lot of people. So to the extent you can control it, do so. To the extent you can't control it, thank your lucky stars that you make so much money, I guess. Other things that people can watch out for when they're looking at tax planning would be if, as I said, whether or not you'd be subject to Medicare surtax, you still might have regular income tax that you want to control a little bit. If you don't need your earnings for cash flow, because I don't want you to incur debt because of cash flow issues, I don't want you to take out loans because of cash flow issues. If you have adequate cash flow and you're not contributing to your 401k to the extent you can, you always want to make sure you're getting your employer match if there is such a thing. You might want to increase your 401k contributions. If you don't have a 401k, you might want to make contributions to a deductible IRA. That'll give you a deduction. If your spouse is not working or does not have a retirement account, retirement plan at work for themselves, and your income is below a certain threshold, you may be able to make contributions to a retirement account for your spouse, as we talked about earlier with John. So you want to look for those opportunities for people who haven't thought about making contributions to retirement accounts for a non-working spouse. You really need to look at that. There are a lot of opportunities there, either for a deductible IRA or for a Roth IRA if you don't need the deduction. So sometimes it's not always just about limiting your tax today. It might be limiting your tax in the future as well and getting yourself set up for some tax-free income from Roths as well. So look at these opportunities. So controlling your income, you may be able to control wages by making more 401k contributions, or as our other caller had mentioned, Albert, for the flexible spending. You can reduce your income by the amount of that you're putting in that flexible spending account. I mean, flexible spending accounts are like the most awesome thing. I mean, it's just a great planning tool. So if you have not really looked at your employer benefits package or have not paid attention to it because you didn't understand it, you need to relook at that. You really need to look at flexible spending accounts and making sure you understand it. It's different than a health savings account. It's different than an HSA. That's something for high deductible health insurance plans. Flexible spending, pre-tax dollars put away for childcare or medical expenses. It's a win-win-win-win-win. Let's see, what other things can we control? Deductions. You can look and see if it makes sense for you to maybe make a charitable contribution this year, or do I put it off for next year? With charitable contributions, you need to also be aware of, you can make contributions of cash, you know, checks on a credit card. You can make them with appreciated stock or mutual funds if you have a charity that will accept that. It's a great way to give away appreciated assets without having to recognize the gain and pay the income tax on the gain. And in fact, next week, we're going to have Bernie Story from Lehigh Valley Community Foundation, and we're going to talk more about ways that people can give in the community and give to a foundation and get a tax deduction and in kind of tax creative ways. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. So you want to look at how can you control your income on page one. Maybe you have some losing investments in your individual accounts, in your individual brokerage accounts, and you haven't taken the time to kind of dump them or get rid of them. This might be a year where you might want to look at that and say, should I harvest those losses, take some of those losses that I have not realized previously and get a deduction on my tax return. I might be able to use losses against other gains I have, which would lower the taxes on those gains, or I might like to use losses against ordinary income. The IRS lets us use those losses up to $3,000 against ordinary income. Frankly, I don't like using losses against 15% capital gains. I like using losses against ordinary income of, you know, 25%. That is true savings. Because what will happen is your losses first offset your gains. And if you have other long-term gains, you know, shoot, you kind of lost the ability to have that 15% gain. I'd rather use losses against short-term gains or ordinary income. There was something else I was going to say about the ordinary income using those losses. Page one, limited to $3,000. And that's just for federal. Pennsylvania is a little trickier. You can't carry forward losses. You know, you can only offset them currently. And husbands and wives can't offset each other's unless it's joint. So look at ways to control your income. Look at ways to control your deductions, your capital losses. Oh, on your brokerage statements, you want to look, it doesn't matter what happens in your IRA, folks, because all that money comes out as ordinary anyway. So we're talking about individual accounts. You want to look on your statements for a column that might say unrealized gains. Not all the statements would report that. You know, realized gains, unrealized gains, realized losses, unrealized losses. Realized means you actually sold it. It's already done. So if you have realized gains and losses on your statement, those are good numbers, and you can use those in your tax planning. But if there's a column or a report that you can get that says unrealized, you might say, hey, you know, I have realized gains of 10,000 and I have unrealized losses of, you know, 5. Maybe you want to take some of those. So you want to look at that with your advisor and see how it'll impact your tax return. I had mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show, too, about sometimes we want to put income on a return because if we don't have any tax or we have huge deductions this year for some reason, maybe we had huge, huge medical expenses, maybe we want to force some income on the return to play tax brackets and maybe pay either no income tax on income or very little income tax. So maybe you want to play those brackets. I also wanted to mention, we're coming up on September 15th, which is the third quarterly estimated tax payment that might be due. For folks who owe money and don't have enough withheld from either their IRA, their pension, their wages, if you don't have enough money withheld to cover your federal income tax, state income tax, then you need to make estimated income tax payments to avoid penalties on underpayment if you don't have a safe harbor in some other way. A safe harbor is you've paid in at least as much as you owed in the last year, or you paid in, 100% or 90% of the current year liability. So there's certain safe harbors we have. But if you owed, you know, $20,000 last year and you've only paid in, you know, $15,000, then you could be exposing yourself to underpayment penalties. So you want to look at the tax planning, the year-end planning, to see if you need to, you know, make either a quarterly payment in September and January, even if you have not done it previously. Maybe there's still time, you can do some quarterly payments, or raise your withholdings on your wages or your IRA or your Social Security or pension. You can go in and change what an employer or a custodian, trustee is taking out of your pay. You can raise it by filling out a W-4, W-4P, W-4 something else for Social Security. So you can raise your withholdings, and that could help you make your safe harbor as far as paying in as much as you owed in the prior year. So this is the time to be looking at that. You cannot wait till the last second, because the IRS will say you did not make your payments evenly throughout the year, unless you did it through withholding, and they'll be expecting quarterly payments. So some folks don't care. They pay the penalty for underpayment. It doesn't matter. And I'll tell you, Pennsylvania definitely wants their money. So if you haven't owed in the past and all of a sudden you had lots of extra interest or dividends or, you know, gains on your sales in Pennsylvania, they do want those quarterly estimated tax payments. Same thing applies for local jurisdictions. They want their quarterly payments now. In the past, you know, they weren't so hard on that. If you have an employer who isn't withholding your local income tax, you need to be making quarterly estimated tax payments to your local tax collector, local earned income tax collector. Okay, so I tried to ram through a bunch of things there in the hour. Loved the calls tonight. Loved the questions. Thank you so much, folks, for calling in. It makes the show a lot more fun for me and hopefully a lot more interesting for all of you as well. We can continue to take questions at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can get more information there as well as to how to do that. Next week, as I said, I'm going to have Bernie Story from the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation. He is the president and CEO, and we are going to discuss a way to give. He came and did a presentation at our office, and I was completely fascinated by his presentation. Just so much information and so much for you to know in this community and the resource that the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation can be for people and ways for you to give. Lots of opportunities. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Judy Ann. Thank you, Jeff. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.